This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Corporate capitalism is king in the United States. That means shareholders control the wealth of the companies. The employees, in effect, rent out their labor for a fixed fee and go home. They have no direct stake in the profitability of the company or the products they make, and the company has no commitment to its workers beyond the paycheck. That is not the only way to organize a company. A film screens next week in Durham that shows an alternative, one its promoters say is more efficient and more democratic. It's called Shift Change, and it follows cooperative business ventures in North America and Spain. A group called Transition Durham will present the film at Full Steam Brewery, 7:30 Monday evening. Ruth Backstrom is one of the founders of Transition Durham, and she joins us now, along with Sandy Smith Nannini. She's adjunct assistant professor in anthropology department at UNC Chapel Hill. And I want to welcome both of you to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks.
Ruth, tell us about this film.
Well, it's a film that looks at cooperatives all around the country and gives us a sense of how cooperatives differ from a regular job in that they build equity. And there's also a voice. You can actually determine what goes on in your cooperative. And the most interesting point they make is that the cooperative structure makes one simple change, which is they're interested in the people and the jobs first instead of profits first, and it makes a huge difference.
And these are for-profit companies, not non-profit.
That's right.
Right, and the money goes back into the company, and people make money, and these companies make more money than they spend, which makes them profitable for-profit companies, right?
That's right.
So tell us about it, because it starts in Spain, and it starts with a cooperative movement that actually got started during the Spanish Civil War in the immediate aftermath, right?
That's right. It starts in the Mondragon region of Spain. And so it's a very old system, basically, that's been around for a long time. And it looks at the experiences and how they've been able to thrive and expand and network together. They can create more capital for more co-ops. So it's a wonderful model because it's not only stagnant, it's actually growing and thriving and taking care of people, so it's sort of your triple bottom line at its best.
Interestingly enough, in Spain, of all places, where the rest of the capitalist economy is smashed to the ground, and it turns out the most successful part of that economy is the co-op economy, which has been growing for decades.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that came out was that if your particular co-op was having trouble, you could actually take one of your workers and put them in a different co-op so you could maintain the same level of employment, which is kind of amazing to think about. I mean, we hear about these other companies with these huge layoffs. So it was really an interesting model in that divergence in that way.
And why is that? Sandy, talk a little bit to us about this feature of the co-op that doesn't require the highest return on financial investment each and every quarter, which I guess allows for some slower growth. If things slow down, I don't have to lay everybody off to keep profits up. I can actually lower my profits for a quarter or two and wait until things turn around.
Absolutely. One of the benefits that the Mondragon co-ops developed was their own lending bank, for example. So if someone wants to break off from an existing co-op and start a new one, the bank will help you get started. And if things turn downward in Mondragon, they actually advise folks all over the world on how to start cooperative businesses. And what they developed there during a downturn in the 70s, they developed a two legislative model for running co-ops. One body represents the workers' interests and the other represents the manager's interests. So they're able to have the workers are able to have a voice. So when things go south, they can decide, let's do furloughs. Let's take a pay cut back. Let's draw on the emergency fund. Alternatives to simple layoffs or close the plant down.
And they didn't go out of business. I mean, that's the key. So that these decisions that they made didn't put them out of business, though if you were a shareholder and the profit went down a little bit, you might have been a little upset. So that's the key difference, that people stay in business and the communities don't get struck as hard.
And they almost all cooperative movements have a strong tie with community. So that way the community retains the jobs, the employees, the business doesn't all crash and burn or move somewhere else because a corporate entity that's headquartered in a remote place decides to shut that one down.
Well, let's hear a little bit from this film and talk a little bit about the impetus behind this, because it's a movement that has been alive for a long time in Spain. We'll talk about it in the United States, but I want to hear this clip from the film Shift Change. Let's listen.
Too often I thought people who were working in progressive organizations, we were trying to protest other things and stop other things, but we weren't trying to build an alternative to that. And to really have a democratic society, we have to have the people who have the democratic values be able to produce bread and be able to produce bicycles and books and the things that we need.
Scene from the movie Shift Change, going to be shown at Full Steam Brewery in Durham Monday night at 7:30. And one of the people who's going to bring that to us is here, Ruth Backstrom from Transition Durham. Ruth, tell us about who was that and the concept that he lays out, that he was somebody who started a bakery, in fact, in San Francisco, and it's a thriving bakery and they're growing now. But the concept here that it's a democratic idea and an alternative, something creative rather than a kind of protest movement against capitalism that throws people out of jobs. No, here's what we can do. Here's the alternative.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way that when Gar Alperovitz was here, he talked about democracy in the workplace. And I think this is a really popular idea now. Michael Moore's movie also mentioned it. And it's the idea that, you know, we spend all of our time in our workplace and it's not democratic. So how can we have a democracy where we're having basically a workplace that's autocratic, and this gap between the money becoming more and more concentrated and wealth becoming concentrated, it's not feasible anymore to have a strong democracy and to have this unequal level of wealth.
And, you know, a lot of people don't appreciate the fact that there are actually cooperatives all around us. And in certain parts of the country, they're very common. Specifically, Minnesota, Wisconsin. There's a new co-op movement in North Dakota. And some of the names we all associate with corporations in the supermarket are actually very successful large cooperatives, like Land O'Lakes, Minute Maid, Sunkist Oranges, True Value Hardware Stores, Ace Hardware, REI Outdoor Equipment. These are very familiar names to us, and we all probably assumed those are just big businesses.
And workers there then share in the profits. So as the profits go up, your wages are tied to that. And if they go down,
exactly,
you have to make decisions about what you're going to do. In all those large corporations, very successful and with long, long lives.
And we have some locally already. We've got the Weaver Street Market in Carrboro and Chatham County Market, and we're soon going to have the Durham Central Market here in Durham.
The Durham Central Market would be another example of that, and so we will talk more about those examples, local, national, and international, when our conversation on the state of things continues. About the movie Shift Change, Ruth Backstrom is here from Transition Durham. Sandy Smith Nannini is an assistant professor in the anthropology department at UNC. More on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today we're talking about the movie Shift Change with Ruth Backstrom of Transition Durham. Sandy Nannini is an assistant professor of anthropology at UNC. It's a movie about cooperative workplaces in America. It's going to show at Full Steam Brewery next Monday, and it talks about the value of these things. And Ruth, one of them is, and I want to listen to this clip from the film, one of the values in all of this is that workers build equity in their work. In other words, as the value of the company grows, their retirement is looking better and better. Let's listen.
Everyone who works in that laundry today own that company. If they're with us 20 years, they will have a nice piece of capital to take with them. Absolutely. So over time, they'll continue to grow that and create hopefully a retirement pool for themselves and be able to walk away and have sent their children to college and own a nice home.
So tell us how that works. How do you cash out? I mean, how do you reap the value, the increased value of a company in the same way we would with the sale of a home? It's my house. I sell it, one owner, one buyer. It's easy, but if the company's still going, how does that work? Does it work different ways, different places?
Yeah, it is organized different ways. Like the Evergreen Co-op, you're supposed to stay in there, the laundry co-op.
That's the one he was talking about, right.
He was talking about. The first 2 years you're in there, and by the third year you start building equity. So by then you have about $30,000 worth of equity. So that gives you a figure to kind of think about, and then it continues to accrue. And the nice thing about it is that it's not like a corporation that can sell itself off and then move to some other place. So it's grounded in the community. So if you leave, that co-op still stays there.
And Sandy, tell us how this works in terms of buying in. Do you have to buy in, and do I need cash to get started?
Not necessarily. People can buy in with their own cash in a lot of co-ops, but more commonly, people accrue that equity over the first few years. In Mondragon, Spain, they get a loan through their own cooperative bank, many other systems simply... it's very similar to an employee stock ownership plan where you become vested every time simply by working at the company. It can be taken out of your paycheck on a monthly basis.
What's interesting is this money is doing everything that money in publicly traded corporations does. It circulates through the community. It builds wealth. People are buying more and more things, more and more construction. Stuff gets bought and sold. Taxes get paid. I mean, it's the same dollar that we're using, right, in these banks and in these co-ops.
But the difference is profit is not taken out of the system to support elites in a faraway place or to support investments that are speculative and nobody in the company thinks are important. Instead, it stays locally and buys local goods and keeps people employed locally, although some of the co-ops we talked about earlier are nationwide, so and some of them are franchises. So they support it's a large outfit, for example, Ace Hardware, that supplies many hardware stores, but each of those is a local business.
All right, but you talked about those elites, but those elites provide a lot of money that ends up in a big capital pool that proponents of Wall Street will tell you, look, without that, we don't have an economy. There's a lot of money floating around, and that money is then used to make businesses that make jobs. We can't. Those elites are doing us a service. They're doing us a favor.
I think that, Frank, in the aftermath of the financial crisis of 2009, people have a lot less faith in that system. They have a lot less faith in being able to climb the ladder and get rich, sort of the old American dream. And what we're seeing is a lot more people looking to local, looking to what's close to home. The Move Your Money campaign last year that Occupy sponsored was an example of take your money out of those big banks and put it in local credit unions, many of which did quite well through that whole crisis because they were more conservatively invested with their money.
Well, self-help right here, just a block away, is a nonprofit that not only survived but thrived through the whole process. Because they do precisely that. They lend to people of low wealth, build business, and build up whole neighborhoods that otherwise were going derelict, and everybody's life gets a little better. And they do it, and they're still there, I should point out. The lights are still on. People still go to work. They get a paycheck, and they spend that paycheck here in the Triangle. But the other side of that is, too, when we invest on Wall Street, we think we're investing in that company. We're not. We're buying that. It's already in a secondary and tertiary mode, like buying a used car. Money doesn't go back to GM. When I buy the used car, it goes to the shareholder, and it goes around that way. So in that way, we're not even capitalizing the company that we thought we bought.
Too much of it goes into executive salaries, too. The typical CEO in our country now is earning 400 times what the average employee makes, way higher than in Europe, not to mention the speculative derivative investments that led to the crisis in the first place.
Ruth, you're working with the city as well as part of this. And maybe I can ask you first to tell us what Transition Durham is and what are your hopes for this film?
Transition Durham, it's a movement that started with Rob Hopkins in England, 2004, I believe. And it's a movement to really get communities to be resilient in the face of adversity, particularly economic diversity, climate change, and post-peak oil. And so the idea is, as communities anticipate problems, they're more likely to be resilient towards them. And we think that food is going to be a big issue in this whole process. And so one of the things we've been working on, particularly with the city, is trying to put together a food plan so that Durham basically can make this transition most smoothly. We're really concerned with the level of food insecurity. There's like 16% food insecurity in North Carolina. We're spending $687 million in North Carolina to cover that shortfall. is there some way we could instead be investing in jobs so we don't have such a large shortfall? Those are the kind of questions that we're trying to ask and to look at. And we're hoping with this film that we can get a group of people interested in starting co-ops, basically, working towards it. We've been in conversation with Gar about that process.
Let me stop you there and remind us, because Gar has been on this program, Gar Alperitz. He's a professor at University of Maryland. Tell us a little bit about him. Remind us who he is.
Okay, so Gar Alperitz is a political scientist who's been working around the country talking about his new book, actually promoting it. And he's been promoting particularly the development of cooperatives and was instrumental in the Evergreen cooperatives, which are three cooperatives, one working with laundry, one with solar, and then the third with hydroponic greenhouse. And so he's been promoting this as the alternative to either sort of crony capitalism that we have now or complete socialism. He's saying this is a great alternative because it creates sort of a hybrid, like a car automobile.
I hear that word and I shudder just a bit because, first of all, we've suffered so long under this binary socialism or capitalism as though this is the only form of ownership and capitalism we can have and that anything else would have to be a combination. It's its own thing. You know, I mean, co-op economies are its own thing and they work. I mean, if they didn't, I think we'd really have to be testing you on this. But they're up and they're functioning.
And Frank, when you study how corporate capitalism works worldwide, they also cooperate. That's what the chambers of commerce are all about. That's what within company trading, corporate welfare there's a lot of cooperation from states giving tax loopholes and subsidies directly to corporations. So they already know that cooperation works. It's a matter of who's cooperating with who for whose benefit.
And the other aspect of this that we haven't talked about much is the sense of ownership, not just in terms of wealth building, but in terms of policy making that workers have when they become the owners of their own work and their own business. Let's listen.
Most other companies, I couldn't share in the decision making because I wouldn't have a vote. At the end of the day, if the work I did produced profit, I wouldn't get to share in that because it would be going somewhere else. If I was concerned about what this was doing to the community, if I worked for another business, that wouldn't matter.
Again, this gets back to the idea that the company is rooted in the community and wants to stay there and wants to keep the jobs there, which is to say, if I know I'm putting that stuff in the stream, that's my stream. My kids go to school there. And I can say something about it, not just get fired, because if it's a big corporation and I mention it, I will lose my job.
When you talk about investment to a CEO and you talk about investment to an average employee, I think they might think really differently about what it's important to invest in. Most folks are concerned that there be a future for their children, that there be a healthy community, that people actually are able to get food and eat locally and have retirement benefits and child care and elder care. Those are what's important to most folks.
But what about decision-making, Ruth? I mean, if everybody owns the business and everybody has a vote, then how do we actually move forward in this when tough decisions have to be made? And the older workers might be thinking about retirement and the younger workers are thinking more about hourly wage. This is a lot of people now having to decide where to go.
Yeah, and I think that one of the points that Gar made, which I think is a really important one, is part of democracy is learning how to negotiate these differences. And if we're not doing it in our workplaces and learning how to do it in our workplaces, what's our hope for doing it as a country? So I think this is actually an opportunity for us to learn how to negotiate things instead of the usual kind of strong-arming that we get into in the current model.
And significantly, the people in these co-ops, the ones you've mentioned and the ones that have gone unmentioned so far, have done that. Haven't gone under.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, they've developed, skills in negotiating. And they admit that there's more meetings, but I think they're energized. And you're really teaching them the value of democracy. There's a kind of passivity that we've fallen into as we just let our elected officials do whatever they decide is right. And there's now a move really to structure more democracy, to have what's called discretionary budget assignments, so people get to choose how money is spent in their local economies and stuff.
It also raises questions about the level of supervision you need. There may be a couple of more meetings, but it strikes me that that's one layer of supervision you don't need when everybody's paycheck depends on the profitability of this company. Sandy?
And, there's It's not like the private sector has some sort of ownership of the notion of professionalism and professional management. All of the co-ops we've talked about are run by professional administrators who trained at the same schools. And the difference may be that there's more promotion within in these companies, so people can grow and develop into something more than they might have hoped for when they first went to school.
I'm guessing that if a raise for me depends on this company doing better, I'm happy to defer to the expert in finance and the expert in accounting mm-hmm. when it comes to that, because my raise depends on that. So I'm looking for experts. I would think that happens in most co-ops. But there's a downside in that it came the film Shift Change suggested some of the problems in Spain. As they get larger, they do have to compete. They become global companies. They're not just local. And then they find themselves in the marketplace struggling with the same questions that other corporations do, low price wages in other parts of the world and how they met that. So, Ruth, let me ask you to talk about that in the film.
Yeah, that is a real issue in terms of how you maintain your standards. And you have these trade-offs that they talk about. You know, are we going to have the same low wages that China has, or are we going to cut back somewhere else? And the thing that's really great about Mondragon is they've really thought out what these priorities look like, and they've taken a stand. You know, I mean, one of the things that I find sad about our country is that we haven't taken that stand. We've sort of let all of our work to get to a great level of wage just sort of go down the tubes with globalization instead of taking a stand and saying, no, these are the standards that we want to have in our country. And I feel like these co-ops is a way back to a really more democratic American way, actually.
What about the role of government, Sandy? What role does it play in either encouraging, inhibiting, partnering with co-ops, or does it have a role at all?
Absolutely, it should have a role, and it really isn't a contradiction at all, because government already enables most successful so-called free enterprise. Government is always playing a role in either smoothing the road or creating obstacles. And really the question is, towards what ends? Is it better for us to put millions of taxpayer dollars at risk in hopes that Dell Corporation will come here and locate their headquarters in the Triangle, for example, when they might, no one is keeping them here, they might leave at any moment when the situation changes? Or is it better to invest in an organization that's deeply rooted in the community and is going to stay?
Also, and imagine government-backed loans. I think this may not be on the table now, but the government backs a lot of loans in small and large businesses to get things going. Imagine
absolutely.
Government-backed loans for individuals to allow them to buy in and gain wealth so that they can retire with a little something, get off the dole, and actually leave something to their children so that, you know, wealth is built in those families.
Absolutely. Why not? Why not? It's a question of where you want to invest. And communities and people and mothers and children, all those are rooted things. Those are people that where place is important. And we need to bring place back in. That's what globalization really raised the question of, oh, place, so what? We can do this anywhere. And I think the movement is switching back to, no, place is important. We have to invest in place. And the other thing, you mentioned competition before, and competition is very important, and competition helps keep us on our toes. It makes us do a good job. But cooperation between co-ops is another factor that I didn't mention before. Many of the farm co-ops, for example, they're both producer, consumer, there are a variety, huge variety of types of co-ops. They cooperate with each other. They often develop trading arrangements where they can trade goods in a way that's beneficial to both parties.
And they stay in business. Well, the place to be on Monday, next Monday night, will be Full Steam Brewery in Durham for a screening of the film Shift Change. And I want to thank both of you for being on the program today.
It was a pleasure, Frank. Thanks a lot.
Ruth Backstrom is with Transition Durham. Sandy Smith-Nannini is an adjunct assistant professor in the anthropology department at UNC Chapel Hill. And the movie Shift Change is going to be shown Monday, 7:30, Full Steam Brewery in Durham. We have more information at our website, wunc.org. Just ahead, we will talk about the seventh angel of the apocalypse and a journey into bipolar disorder. Stay tuned.